This Is Your Life, episode 78. Hello and welcome to this episode of This Is Your Life. My name is Michael Hyatt and this is the podcast dedicated to intentional leadership. My goal is to help you live with more passion, work with greater focus, and lead with extraordinary influence. In this episode, I want to share with you the replay of a live Q&A call I did a few weeks ago on the topic of goal setting. I thought since this is the first of the new year, this would be particularly appropriate, but we had more than 1,000 people on the call, and we had some great, great questions from the participants. And we did this to promote my new course, 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever. Maybe you've been hearing about this, but we opened the course up on December the 18th. Since that time, we've had more than 2,000 people who have enrolled in it, and we expect that number to double before the registration ends on midnight, January the 16th. We'll tell you more about that and what you can expect in the course during the replay of the call, but in case you can't listen to the whole thing, you can find out more at bestyearever.me/register. Let me give that to you again, bestyearever.me/register. And even if you don't buy the course, I think you'll find this replay extremely practical and valuable as you look to the new year. So without further ado, here's the replay.
Well, welcome everyone to this very special edition live Q&A with Michael Hyatt. Tonight's call is brought to you by Platform University and MichaelHyatt.com. My name is Joy Grobelby of the Frontline Group, and I'll be your moderator this evening. I'm also joined by our friend Daniel Decker, who will be helping us field live calls and make this a great experience for you. Daniel, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
And finally, Mr. Michael Hyatt is here to answer your questions. Michael, thanks for joining us this evening.
Thanks, Joy, and thank you for hosting this.
It is going to be fun tonight. We've got some great questions.
I'm excited.
And of course, I want to welcome all of you listening to this call, including our Platform University members, MichaelHyatt.com blog readers, and those of you excited to learn how to make 2014 your best year ever. Whether you're on the line with us, tuning in via the live stream, or listening to the recording of this call, we're so glad to have you here. So as you already know, Michael's been working for some time to craft a proven goal-setting process that enables you to systematically create your best year ever. The course is called 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever, and it's incredibly powerful. I got a sneak peek today. I've barely had time to look through it all, but I can't wait to go through the process. We're going to talk a little bit more about that later, but right now, let me give you the chance to ask any questions you have about the goal setting process, secrets to personal and professional achievement, and how to overcome the obstacles that always present themselves along the way of trying to accomplish what matters most. Michael, this is a great topic to discuss now just before the kickoff of the new year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love this time of year because it's so full of possibility. You know, you're looking forward to this next year. It's like a blank canvas, and it's just one of my favorite times to dream and to think about what could be.
Well, seriously, the questions tonight are amazing. We had to narrow it down, and I know we'll have some great live calls too. But before we launch into those questions, why don't you tell me a little bit about what you've been working on lately?
Yeah, so we put together this course, hence this teleseminar that we're doing and the live call, but it's called 5 Days to Your Best Year Ever. And we got this idea actually a couple of years ago because we were thinking there's this process that I've been going through for several years on creating the next year because I've thought, you know, you're going to live through the next year more than likely. So why not make it your best year ever? And I think like everything in life, this is kind of my philosophy. It starts with the right intention. And if you have an intention about what could be and how you can make it a great year, then you much have a much higher probability of actually pulling it off. So we created this course. It's a 5-part course. We'll tell you more about it later, but there's some bonuses and all of that. The key thing is that this product will only be available until January the 16th. At that point, registration will close. And the link to that, in case you have to jump off the call mid-call, is bestyearever.me/register. That's where you want to go if you want more information about it. We'll talk about it more later, but we really just want to answer questions about goal setting and add some value to people as they're thinking about this next year.
I am pumped about this course. If anyone listening is serious about experiencing a different outcome in 2014 than they did in 2013, this is something you really want to check out. So let's get back to the call. We'll come back to the course later, but we will take live questions on the air and via Twitter throughout the hour. So just tweet that question using the hashtag best year ever, which is different than normal. So hashtag tonight is best year ever. I'll monitor that Twitter feed throughout the call and we'll get to as many of those as possible. So if you have any interesting quotes or ideas, you can share those as well via Twitter with that same hashtag. If you want to refer to Michael, he is at Michael Hyatt and my Twitter sign is at JoyJoyG. Also, I hope you're okay with this, Michael, but I was thinking it'd be fun if we take all the tweets tonight and give away a free copy of the course at the end of the call at random to someone who tweets.
I love that idea. Let's do it.
I love giving stuff away.
Me too.
Especially your stuff. Love giving it away. Okay, so let's get going. Seriously, the questions tonight are outstanding. We had a really hard time narrowing them down. But I want to talk first about prioritizing goals. And Michael Kimball wrote in and asked, if you want to pick your most important goal for the year out of several goals you have, they're all pressing on you of seemingly equal importance. How do you decide which one to do first?
Well, first of all, that's really a common experience that people have. They feel kind of overwhelmed. I mean, kind of once you get past the resistance to actually plan next year and to come up with a set of goals, it's easy to go crazy and start planning, coming up with a bunch of goals, and they kind of all feel like they have equal weight. But here's how I look at it, Joy. I try to think of those things that are related to personal development or taking care of myself. It's kind of like when you fly on an airplane and the flight attendant comes out and goes through that pre-flight safety check and tells you that in the event of a loss of cabin pressure, you know, these things will pop down from the ceiling and you'll be able to affix them to your own nose and breathe. That's kind of my abbreviated version. But essentially what it says is that until you try to, before you try to help somebody else, you got to help yourself. And so for me, the goals that are primary are the ones that are going to help me be the most healthy individual I can be. Because when I'm healthy, emotionally, spiritually, relationally, physically, then I have the resources I need to help other people. And if I don't tend to that, if I try to make something else primary, like my career ahead of that, for example, then I really don't have the resources. And it's easy for me to end up in a spot where I'm not as resourceful as I'd like to be and not as helpful as I'd like to be. So to me, that's what takes precedence. You know, and Stephen Covey used to call this sharpening the saw, but the goals that are related to sharpening the saw and keeping the saw sharp are the ones that are primary.
So do you think you should only have one goal or should you prioritize one goal from your list as the number one thing?
Well, actually, you can do what Chalene Johnson talks about in her book, Push, which is a great book. But she talks about actually picking one goal that is your push goal. And I actually talk about that in the course as well. But it's like a domino. You know, it's that one goal that if you could knock that one down, if you could really see momentum on that one goal, it would enable everything else. So maybe for you, it's just, you know, getting out and running every day or walking or doing some kind of physical exercise. It makes you feel stronger. It makes you feel more confident. It makes you feel like you're more on top of your day. And maybe for you, that's your push goal. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's having a quiet time in the morning where you meditate or pray or read through the Bible or something else. But that's that time to nurture your own spirit or your own soul. So yes, I do. I would pick one goal that is my primary goal or your push goal and really focus on that as the top priority.
Here's a question about creating an action plan. And this is from Christy Largent. She said, can you talk about steps to setting up and implementing a system in order to reach the goal? It's easy to set a goal. The hard part is figuring out the how. I think a system would help, but would appreciate tips on the how to of that.
Okay. So I really have kind of a counterintuitive answer to that. And it's this. Most action plans, when they start getting really involved, become a fancy way to procrastinate. You know, and I know people that come up with these elaborate action plans and they know who's going to do what first and second and third and, you know, all this stuff. They spend a ton of time doing that rather than just executing. And I do think that's important in some situations. I mean, you know, we launched this product this morning and we had an overarching action plan. But for most of the stuff that we're doing from day to day, you know, we're not building a nuclear submarine. We're probably not building a house. If we do, we better have an action plan. But for the things that typically are on our goal sheet, you know, the important thing is to identify the next action. What's the next most important thing we need to do? And then knock that off. You know, what's the thing that we can do today and put on our to-do list that's important to move towards that goal? Because a lot of things, if we're taking on the right goals, if we're taking on the ones that really get us outside of our comfort zone and expand our thinking, and the ones that we find personally compelling, those are the ones where we just need to identify the next action and stay in the game. And we may not know what the strategy is or what all the how-tos are between here and there, but we typically know what to do next. And if we are faithful to do what is next, then the path opens up and we see what to do beyond that. And we can inch our way forward by doing that.
Let's talk about being overwhelmed by too many goals. And I think this is probably most people's problem. Not that I can personally relate, but I can. This is from Trina Lee. And she says, when I think of all the things I want to change in my life, I can easily get overwhelmed. Even the goal of losing weight seems to evolve into a set of 10 individual goals, like eating breakfast, recording what I eat, working out. How do you focus on a few goals when many things seem urgent and important in order to be successful in achieving your goals?
Yeah, this is a great question from Trina. And I would just say that you kind of got to distinguish between goals and practices or habits. And a lot of what she mentioned in her question are practices. But what's the overarching goal? You know, maybe it is to lose, I'm just making this number up, but it's to lose 20 pounds by April the 30th. You know, that would be a SMART goal. That would be a goal that would have a deadline on it, that would be specific and measurable, and that would be great. Well, there's a lot of little practices that would go into making that goal, but I wouldn't list those in my goals. I would focus on the outcome. That's the key thing. Not the process, not the practice, but what's the outcome that you're after? And that's what should go on your goal so that you don't get overwhelmed, because that's the thing that often derails all of us. It's not just Trina that struggles with this.
No, that's what makes it so hard sometimes. I think it gets a bit overwhelming and you think about all the things you have to do and you do lose sight of the end goal for sure.
You do. And that's why simplicity is your friend. I mean, literally from my perspective, every year I come up with 7 to 10 goals. I really don't go more than 10 goals, 7 to 10 goals. I want to be able to view them. I have them in Evernote. And so I want to be able to view them so that they're in close proximity to another. I tag them with the word goals. And so they all come up together and I can see them, but it's not this long laundry list that just overwhelms me and defeats me before I start. But it's these 7 to 10 goals that I really want to focus on and keep them at that high level. And then the actions you're going to take, the things that Trina mentioned, recording what you're going to eat, getting up at a certain period of time, working out 6 times a week, all that can be part of your practice to move toward the goal.
Well, it was inevitable that weight loss would come up about immediately when one starts talking about goals. So this kind of goes to that. This is from @SynergyBizNWA. I think it's Barbara Taylor on Twitter. She says, how do you regroup and get motivated to achieve a goal that you missed last year or previously?
Well, this is such an important question, because I think that sometimes when we're setting out to accomplish things that are meaningful, there's some risk involved. I mean, there's a possibility that we don't accomplish them. And that's why we've got to get complete with the past. And I talk about this actually in the course, in the second lesson or day two, where we talk about getting complete with the past. Because if you don't get complete with the past and process it, you're liable to drag that into the next year, or it could keep you or inhibit you from setting a big goal next year. You might play it safe. And certainly it should inform your goal planning, but it shouldn't ever give you that that sense that you're trying to dial it back or not really, you know, try to accomplish something that you find personally meaning. Certainly you want to deconstruct it. You want to assess it, ask yourself the question, why did I miss it? First of all, understand that you're not alone. People that are high achievers frequently miss goals. I mean, hear me on that. You know, of all the goals that I set for this year in 2013, I hit about half of them. But here's the deal. If I hadn't set those goals, how many of them would I hit? Probably none of them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the value of goal setting, is that it stretches you, but you just can't beat yourself up or shame yourself if you don't hit those goals. You've got to process it. You've got to acknowledge what you accomplished, celebrate it, be grateful for what you accomplished, and then set some big goals for this next year.
Let's take a call from a live caller. This is, if your phone number ends in F, you are on the line.
Hello.
Hi there. What's your name?
Mike Kim.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. What's your question?
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
Great. Thank you.
Here's my question, Michael. Can you share a little bit of your personal growth plan or how it's changed either over the years or especially between career changes? I'd love to get like an inside look at when you maybe left your CEO position and went into your own business. Like, how did your goal setting have to shift? Was there a dramatic change or adjustment, if any?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mike, and it's good to hear your voice too. We met Mike at the Platform Conference and have talked to him here and there on various forums and so forth. But yeah, they did shift. And I think one of the most important things to take into consideration is the season in life that you're at. You know, if you're a mom or a dad of small children, you know, that's going to inform your goals. You can't accomplish or do the same kinds of things that I can do because my family's out of the house. I don't have the same responsibilities to my family that you might have. It's more time consuming at that stage in life. So to acknowledge that, when I left being the CEO at Thomas Nelson, probably the biggest adjustment I had to make is that I had this huge staff available to me at Thomas Nelson so that when I conceived of something, I could pretty much delegate it out and accomplish it through using other people. And I had a lot of resources at my disposal. Suddenly I became an entrepreneur running a small business without a lot of resources. And so a lot more was falling on me. So I had to be a little more tempered and a little measured and informed by the fact that I had less resources than I had. I still dream big. I had to assemble the resources together, but I had to be informed by that shift in life. So context, and that's the thing I want to say, Mike, context is super, super important. You've got to consider that, and you can't measure your context against somebody else's context. There's a temptation to do that, but it's not wisdom that leads you there.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, thanks for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Here's a great little bit from Twitter. This is from Jill the SWM, and she says, listening to Michael Hyatt, best year ever. Focus on the outcome of the goal, not what you have to do to get there.
Yes.
Twitter is on fire. I can't even keep up with everything you guys are putting out there. Let's take another call from our list here. This is something I think people question. You mentioned Evernote, but this is from John Clark. And he said, do you have an organized way that you store your goals so that they're easy to review and work with? Michael, is Evernote the only app? Do you have other apps that you use to help keep track of your goals?
Yeah, I actually use two apps, and let me tell you how I use them. I use Evernote to store the actual note, the goal. So whatever the goal is, I store it in Evernote as a discrete note, and I tag it with the word goals. And so that's in my hierarchy of tags, and that's referring to my annual goals. And so then anything related to that goal, any resource, just random actions that I think I need to take or anything that I find inspirational, I put in that particular Evernote note related to that goal. Now, when it comes to task management, some people use Evernote, and it's becoming increasingly easy to use for task management, but I use a program called Nozbe, N-O-Z-B-E, and you can find them on Twitter at Nozbe, but that's my task management system. And so what I do is I review my goals, and whatever the next action is ends up for me in Nozbe so that I can manage it and make sure that I work toward it. So those are my two principal tools. And by the way, I'm doing a bonus for the 5 days course that's going to be all about sort of a beginner's guide to task management and a screencast of exactly how I do that so you can see it. It's kind of a peek behind the curtain so people can see exactly what I do.
That's awesome. Awesome. This question goes along with that. This is from LJ Hendrickson on Twitter. He said, how often should I be reviewing and adjusting goals throughout the year?
That's a good question too. I do adjust occasionally. For example, like if there's a goal that I had and a deadline that I had and I missed the deadline, then I'll recalibrate and reset. And one of the questions to ask yourself as you go through the year, there may be goals that you think are really important now, but maybe you get a unexpected curveball thrown at you in the middle of the year or something changes, life circumstances, whatever. And suddenly now you realize that there are some goals that need to be added or some goals that need to be subtracted. That's fine. I think it should be a living document. I would be careful about giving up on goals when you're in the what some have called and what I call the messy middle, because there's always, in the middle of any significant project, that part when you want to quit. You don't think you have the strength to go on and finish it, but you've invested too much to stop. And, you know, you get in that situation and you're tempted to just quit on the goal. And I would avoid that. But having said that, you've got to use some judgment and discernment, and you can't be legalistic about it. If there's a goal that just needs to go because your situation has changed, then boot it. You want to be focused on goals that are meaningful to you and are really important for achieving what matters most.
I think that's so important because, you know, circumstances change throughout the year. And I've always felt so calm setting goals. My parents have had us setting goals since we were young, young children. And I've always felt so comfortable doing it because you can always change your timeline. You can always, nothing's set in stone. And sometimes you achieve your goal early and you have to make it harder, you know, so it goes either way.
Yeah, that's really true. And sometimes you shoot too low. But, you know, one of the things I try to do, Joy, is make sure that all my goals are outside of my comfort zone. You know, I don't get psychotic or crazy. You know, I don't try to make them so big and so impossible. Like a crazy goal for me would be to end up on the senior tour of the PGA. And anybody that's played golf with me knows that would be a ridiculous kind of achievement for me to shoot for. But I do want it outside of my comfort zone. You know, because if I don't put it outside of my comfort zone, it's not going to be personally compelling. And all the good stuff happens outside of our comfort zone. That's where the growth happens. That's where the fulfillment is. That's where the happiness is. And so we got to be careful about playing it safe. If we play it too safe, we'll just give up on the goal because it's not that compelling.
What about, you mentioned the messy middle just a few minutes ago. And here's a question from Poonam Kale. How do you keep your motivation going during the middle phase when you just want to give up, but know that you need to keep going in order to achieve your goal?
Well, I've had this experience, you know, 1,000 times where I've felt just like that. And I think what I've come to expect now is that that's how you always feel in the middle of a major project. So you shouldn't be surprised when it happens. You can actually look at it kind of objectively and go, oh yeah, this is that messy middle part, that part where I lose energy, I lose motivation, I want to quit on the goal. For me, and this happened when I was writing my book Platform, I got, my deadline was November the 30th. This was back in 2011. I was supposed to finish the manuscript by then. And I got to November the 30th and I was like a third done. You know, I'd just been a very busy fall and I was really frustrated and I wasn't making the progress I had hoped. And I thought, why don't I just give up on this? I was ready to throw in the towel, return the royalty advance money to the publisher and move on to something else. But fortunately for me, when I had set that goal, I had written down what I call my motivations. I'd answered the question, why? And I wrote those down as a series of bullets. Why is this project important to me? What was at stake if I didn't finish? What was the reward if I did finish? And so I connected brand new, like it was the first time, why this was important, what was at stake. And that's what kept me going. That's what made me just kind of, you know, to use a metaphor, tie another knot in the rope and just keep moving up. And I did. I was able to finish it. I missed the deadline, but I finished it. You know, I was able to finish it right after the first of the year and the book came out, went on to hit the New York Times list and all that. So it's important, I think, for every significant goal. And this is one of the things I have in the Evernote file, is my list of motivations for that particular goal. Again, Joy, as a series of bulleted items. What's at stake? Why is it important? Why am I going to press on when the going gets tough?
Let's talk to another live caller. This caller, your phone number ends in... Can you tell us your name?
Hi. Yes, this is Elsa calling from Boston.
Hi, Elsa.
Hi, Elsa.
Hi, Michael. Hi, Joy. I'm glad you could host this today.
Thank you.
My question is about goals and habits. How do those work together? So say I want to lose weight, right? So one of the habits I'd like to implement would be drinking, you know, a gallon of water every day, or, you know, exercising every day. How do I plug that in to my goal of, say, losing 30 pounds by the end of the year?
Great question. And the habits are really the means to the end. So they're part of the process that gets you to the goal. Now, I've found that it's hard for me to develop new habits or get rid of bad habits that I don't want unless I have a goal that I'm shooting for. You know, for example, if somebody's trying to quit smoking, just to use another example. You know, that's a habit, but it's just hard to just quit that, especially with smoking being such an addictive habit, unless you have a bigger goal. You know, so for some people, you know, that goal is going to be that they want to be in the best shape of their life, or they don't want to die young, or they don't want to develop cancer. It could be a lot of different things, but it's a means to the end.
Okay.
And so that's how I would see it. And I think, in fact, with every big goal, you can identify the habits or the practices that will lead you toward that goal. Because when you really boil it down, progress towards a goal ends up becoming, you know, a series of habits or practices that get you there. Sometimes it's a one-time action. You know, there's some phone call you need to make, or there's something you need to write, or something you need to create. But a lot of this boils down to new habits. And I just would caution anybody who's listening to this call not to try to create too many new habits at once. And a great book on this topic is The Power of Habit, which goes into this in some depth.
Mm-hmm. That's a good book.
All right.
Thanks for your question.
Thanks, Elsa. It seems like a lot of people are just looking at Twitter and reading the questions that came in. Setting the goal isn't the hard part. It's the how-to after they set it. It's the action plan after they set it. What's your advice on that action plan?
Well, again, I think you should focus on the next most important action. The most important thing in accomplishing big goals is momentum. You've got to develop a sense of momentum. One of the problems with creating a big action plan is that by the time you're done creating that action plan, you look at that goal, you look at the action plan and everything that needs to be done, and you go, oh my gosh, you know, I want to quit before I start. There's so much work involved. Well, there is a lot of work involved. And that's why it's important to identify the next action and get into motion fast. And you've got to chunk it down so that the next action is something you can actually do. And let me give you an example. We talked about writing a book. I know a lot of the people that are on this call are people that are thinking about writing a book or have written a book. But if your goal is to write a book, then it becomes like, you know, that may be your goal. Maybe you're going to write a manuscript, or you're going to write a book proposal by a certain date. Great. But if you look at just that, it might be discouraging. But if you think to yourself, okay, today, all I'm going to do is I'm going to set up a Word template, and I'm just going to identify the key sections that need to be filled out. That's all I'm going to do. And tomorrow, maybe I'm just going to fill out the first section of the book proposal, which, you know, is the section about what the premise is about the book. Or maybe I'm going to do the last part. And by the way, when I write books, I always write the easiest chapters first. Why? Because I want momentum.
Right.
So I think if a lot of people have that backwards, they think, okay, what's the biggest action I need to take? And I'm going to do that first. And then they get defeated before they start because they can't get the emotional energy or whatever they need to start. Like I was working on this book this summer, The Life Plan Manifesto, and I wrote it from easiest to most difficult. And I knew there was this one chapter that was going to require a tremendous amount of research and that was going to be the most difficult. I wrote that last. Because by the time I got to it, out of 12 chapters, I said, look, I've already written 11 chapters. I am absolutely going to finish this book. And the only thing standing between me and doing that is this last chapter. So I do the easiest first, get a sense of momentum, and do the most difficult last.
And how did that work?
Worked great.
Yeah.
Finished that manuscript in a month, as you know.
You did.
And,
right on time.
You know, I had hoped to finish it a week before my original deadline, so I had about a week to do some polishing on it. I didn't do that. I finished it on the exact day that the last day that I was on this writing retreat. But I'm telling you, without that deadline and without that process, you know, that's something that just could have drug on for months, but it didn't. I got it done. No plan ever works out like you conceive of it at the beginning, but at least with a goal, you've got a direction and you're going to do much better than without one.
So my whole life, I've always heard, you know, once you set your goal, you need to tell people about it to hold yourself accountable. And on the bestyourever.me, all the comments that are on the video series there, which if you haven't checked the video out, you really should check it out. It's an awesome, awesome video with great information. But people are sharing their goals. And this is a great Twitter question from @CarlCBird. He says, Michael, how widely do you publicize your goal?
Well, I'm going to tell you what I used to do. And then I'll tell you what I believe now. So I used to think I want to go public with my goal because if I do that, I can use it as leverage in my own life, because if I don't accomplish it, I'll be embarrassed. So I remember one time I was going to run my first half marathon. It was about 8 years ago. And I thought, I'm going public with this. And I even posted on my blog that I was going to do that. And, you know, it worked for me. But one of the things that I discovered, and this is in some research that was presented by Derek Sivers, and you can find this on the TED website, the TED conference. It was the 2010 TED conference, in which he talked about whether or not you should keep your goals private or you should declare them publicly. And he was basing his presentation on some work by a bunch of psychologists, and you can find out if you want to listen to his presentation there. But basically, the idea is that if you share what you're doing publicly before you've done it, you get the same sense of psychological satisfaction as actually having done it. And so there's not the motivation to complete it. Now, I actually find a middle ground between these two. I think you should share it, but only with people that will be supportive. In other words, people that will hold you accountable, people that love you, but frankly, people that will kick your butt when you're not making any progress.
Right.
And so one of the things that we've built into the 5 days curriculum, the 5 days course, is a discussion forum where people can share their goals with other people who are all committed to accomplishing similar kinds of things, who really want to make 2014 their best year ever. And so that's a supportive community. And I think it's fine to do it in that context, especially if you're asking people to hold you accountable. But I would be very wary about sharing it with people that will be cynical or people that will sabotage, maybe even in unconscious ways, what you're trying to accomplish. Like maybe you're trying to lose weight, but you have a spouse that is not going to be supportive of that. And maybe they're always wanting to go eat stuff that's not healthy. And maybe they're not even conscious they're doing it. But I would be cautious about that. You know, on the other hand, you can share it with people that it will support you. You know, if you're trying to do something that's significant to you, find some other people that are out to accomplish the same thing and encourage one another, hold each other accountable. So all that to say, limited group.
That's super important. There's a lot of questions out there that are all about if you don't hit your goal, all over Twitter right now. Here's one from Melanie Ann TN. And she says, what if your first step is a flop? Do you just back up and try something else? Is that a reflection on the goal itself?
The answer is maybe. It could be. I think it's important to really be reflective. And that's why I encourage, I've got day two in the course is 7 questions for reflection on 2013. But to really run those questions or those goals through a process and examine them, you know, kind of do, sometimes people call this a post-mortem, but a debrief, a review. And I think that for a lot of people who are high achievers, and this is true for me, you know, I don't spend enough time reviewing what happened. It's really easy for me to jump to the next thing and forget to analyze it. But a lot of times there are good reasons why that didn't work, why you didn't accomplish it. And I think it's important to identify what those reasons are and, you know, celebrate, as I said earlier in the call, celebrate what the wins were and what you did accomplish, despite the fact that maybe you didn't hit your ultimate goal. Maybe you made real progress toward it. I was talking, for example, to a woman the other day who was a little bit discouraged because her goal for last year was to lose 70 pounds and she only lost 55.
Oh, geez.
And you go, are you kidding me? I mean, look what you did. Yeah, you didn't hit the 70. But honestly, when you set that goal at the beginning, you know, you were just guessing. I mean, you knew what you wanted to lose. But OK, so this takes you 2 years or it takes you 18 months. How far would you be if you hadn't had that goal?
Right.
So I think before you just, you know, pull another goal out of the thin air, it's important to be informed by it, because sometimes you realize if you've never done something before that maybe your goal was crazy. Maybe it was too big. Maybe it wasn't realistic enough, or maybe it was too small. Maybe you go back the other direction and it didn't compel you to move on. So yeah, review is critically important.
I think review is important. And you know me, I'm a big fan of celebrating when you accomplish something or you achieve your goal.
You're great
at it.
I
think that's so important, because otherwise, geez, you did all that work and you didn't take the time to enjoy it.
Yeah. You're much better at this than I am. I wished I was better at this, because it really is important. Okay, so this is one of those times where I'm not talking to you out of my experience so much, but I'm just affirming what you're saying, Joy.
Right.
I think it's really important to celebrate those things, and it's really important for your team to celebrate those things. Achiever is my number one strength, if you look at the Strength Finders test. And so for me, once I check something off, it's dead to me. You know, I'm like, I'm done with it. I'm on to the next thing. I don't care what it is. But I realize that I have to celebrate not just for myself, but for the people around me who have contributed to that success.
It's important. It is. I will help you learn to party. Okay. That's my goal in 2014. Help Michael Hyatt party. Okay, let's talk about, this is a great question. And for me being a mom, I think this is just so, so important. This is from Jackie Bledsoe. She says, in addition to setting my goals and direction, I'd also like to help my family do the same. Do you have any suggestions for setting family goals and or helping your kids create and maintain the habit of goal setting and achieving? Her children are 13, 8, and 4.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And absolutely. I mean, Joy, you were saying that your parents did this with you early on.
Always.
Yeah, I think make sure that you help them focus on simplicity, but teach them the concept of goal setting. Don't get too many of them, but just, you know, maybe it's one goal for this year. And explain to them the whole process of setting a goal that's, and we talk about this in the course, but a goal that's specific and measurable and attainable and all the rest that make up the SMART acronym. But I would teach them through that process and say, hey, let's do this together. Help me be a consultant or a coach to you. Now, I'm going to tell you something as a parent now of grown children. One of the things that I was told early on, and I can't remember who, it might have been Dr. James Dobson, but essentially your goal in parenting is to unparent. In other words, you want your children to be able to survive on their own without your parenting. And so as they get older, you transition from a period of, you know, sort of being somebody who's in more control to somebody who's in less in control, somebody who's more directive to someone who moves into a more consultative role where you're counseling them. And one of my favorite things today with my grown children is being able to serve as a resource to them and coach them, encourage them, answer questions where I can, more importantly, ask questions where I can. But you can start doing that with your kids. Help them identify the goal. And then help provide the resources in terms of helping them think through how they might accomplish it. I think that could be possibly one of the most, if not the most important, life skill that you could give to your children.
I totally agree. And you know, this was 20 years ago. So now with technology, you could do it differently. But my folks always had us create like a dream board. So I had big goals to run like a low 5-minute mile when I was in high school. So they had me, you know, cut out pictures and of representing all the things I would do in order to reach that goal. And you can do that even with little kids, you know, kindergarten, first, second graders, help them make a dream board, how they're going to achieve their goals.
Yeah, I love that idea too. I don't personally have one of those, but my daughter and son-in-law, Chris and Mary Crimmins, do that. They have a vision board and they just go through and they cut out pictures that are meaningful to them. I do have a kind of a couple, I'm not sure what you call them, but things that represent the goal.
Yeah, you got some. Talk about those.
Artifacts. Well, it's kind of embarrassing. Well, okay, I'm going to share one that's not so embarrassing. But one of them I have, for example, is we want to build this addition onto our house. And so I had the contractor create this model so that it's actually created as though it were complete. It's a 3D model. And so I look at that. And it helps me envision what the final product is. And it just makes it more concrete. And I mean, you know, this could probably get hokey, but it just, again, helps me to visualize what it is that I'm after and what I'm trying to create. So, yeah, I think whether it could be on Pinterest, could be a vision board,
Ooh, I like that.
Be a bulletin board. It could be a 3D model or something that's a token of what it is you want. Maybe it's a picture of a great relationship with a child or a great relationship with a spouse that represents for you the kind of relationship that you want to have with your own spouse or loved one.
I love that. And anything on Pinterest, I'm in. I'm in. If I could do my whole job on Pinterest, that'd be fantastic. Okay, we've got lots of people waiting to ask live questions. So this next one is from a caller whose number ends in... Are you there?
I am. Hi, my name is Lynn. And I want to ask you, Michael, I've heard much about SMART goals, frankly, throughout the years. So what makes your program different?
Yeah, I think the SMART goals are important. And I think for a lot of people, you know, that's actually some brand new stuff. And you can find that kind of information online if you want. But I think the thing that makes mine different is all the stuff that's around the SMART goals. Like it's the importance of completing the past, the importance of visualizing breakthrough, the importance of being able to identify your motivations, and more importantly, the ability to execute against those goals and actually make them happen. So it's a lot, but the SMART goals is one session, but that's 1 out of 5.
And could I just add to that, how do the goals fit into your life plan?
Ah, great question.
Good question.
Well, in my life plan, and for those of you that don't know, I talk about life plan on my blog, and you can get the free ebook just by signing up for my email newsletter list at michaelhyatt.com. But one of the things that I help you do in the life plan is identify your life accounts. In other words, if you think of the different areas or the different categories of your life as though it were a bank account, some have positive balances, some have negative balances, some are, you know, just sort of holding even. But in those areas, I encourage you in the life plan to develop a vision, also a sense of purpose about it. And then where I think the goals fit in is actually in each of those life accounts. So I typically have a goal that's related to my marriage. I'll have one that's related to my health. I'll have one that's related to my career. So I use that same kind of schema in the life plan to identify those near-term or annual goals. I'll have a vision for that life account that's very long-term. You know, it's kind of like my overall health, for example, or my marriage long-term, my vision for it. But the goal setting inside of that is more near-term in that the horizon I'm looking at is for this next year. What do I want to accomplish in 2014 that's going to move me toward or make that life account have a positive balance by the end of the year?
Great.
Does that help?
Thank you so much. Sure does. Thanks.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Here's another great question off of Twitter. This is from @AnnaGarciaHerre, H-E-R-R-E. She says, Michael, I feel perfectionism is holding me back from achieving my goals. Any suggestions on how to deal with this? You've probably never experienced that personally.
Yeah, I'm a recovering perfectionist. and you know, it's tough because, you know, I've talked about this in other contexts, but I'm really committed to creating wow, you know, exceeding people's expectations. And that can sometimes lead me to perfectionism, which means that I tinker with things forever and I don't ship them. And so one of the things that's helped me is to realize a couple things, Joy. One is to realize that in the world of the internet, and this doesn't apply, by the way, to heart surgery or other issues where you pretty much got to get it right the first time. But for the rest of the goals that we're in, you can ship it and improve it. You know, think of it as kind of permanent beta. For example, we launched the course today, the 5 days course, and we had some glitches this morning. And it was a launch kind of like, I think of the metaphor of a launch, you know, when you're trying to when NASA's trying to launch a rocket, when it's trying to get off the pad, there's enormous vibration, you know, and you're not quite sure if you're going to die, I'm told, or if the thing's going to really get into orbit. And that's how sometimes the launch of anything is. It's a little bit messy on the front end, but you can tweak it. So the most important thing is, I think, to get over perfectionism is just to realize that you're never going to have it perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect. And sometimes the things that you notice that keep you from shipping whatever it is you're trying to do are things that other people aren't going to notice. And something, and this has helped me a lot, something is better than nothing. You know, I can wait till I get it perfect and that day will never come and I'll never accomplish anything. Or I can do something that maybe isn't perfect, but it's pretty darn good. And then I can improve it over time. And that's my philosophy now.
That's so true. I mean, it happens over and over with projects. And, you know, if you wait, I just had a phone call with someone today and one of their questions was, do I have to have everything about my blog? Do I have to have the right photography and all the design done? And I said, you know what? Get enough of it done so people know it's you, but they're never going to find you if you don't start putting content out there. So even if it's not perfect, just get it started.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yep.
Let's take another live call. This is from a phone number ending in...
Hi. My question actually was kind of similar to an earlier question. Before I set goals, I want to know that I'm going in the right direction, that there's alignment, you know, between my why or my calling. However, I tend to struggle with something that Jim Collins refers to as the hedgehog principle, where I'm a fox, where I have two passions and desires. And so what advice would you give to me, you know, trying to discover what my calling is, what my why is, when I have so many passions and desires? I seem to get paralyzed from all the options.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that's characteristic of a lot of highly talented people. You know, people that have a lot of interests, they've got a lot of goals, a lot of things they want to accomplish, but focus is the key. And for me, it's helped to try to discern kind of what my sweet spot is. And I think that for most people, they find it at the intersection of three concentric circles. So just imagine with me for a minute that we're looking at a diagram or up on a chalkboard or a whiteboard, and I've drawn three concentric circles that overlap. And so it's like a Venn diagram, so that in the middle there's overlap. And what you want is the overlap of three elements. Number one, passion. What are you really passionate about? You know, what lights your fire? What gets you up in the morning? What gets you really excited? Not what you ought to do, but what you really enjoy doing. That's number one. The second circle is all about competence. What are you good at? And by the way, this plays off Jim Collins' modeling, Good to Great. He uses it for corporations. I'm using it for individuals. So your competence, your passion and your competence. What are you good at? You know, because sometimes we're passionate about something, we're just not very good at it. You know, and that's a good candidate for a hobby, but probably not your calling. But then in addition to that, particularly when it comes to career, it's got to be the third circle, and that's market demand. What is the market willing to pay for? Particularly, again, if you're looking at something that that is a career goal, are you passionate at it? Are you good at it? And is the market willing to pay you for it? We have people in Nashville, where I live, for example, that are passionate about music. They're really good at it. It's just that they can't get a gig. And again, that's probably better as a hobby, not as a career. So that's kind of the lens that I run things through. And I'll give you a real concrete example. I love to play guitar. I just recently bought a brand new guitar after about a 30-year hiatus. But I don't have any illusions that I'm going to play guitar professionally. It's just for my pure enjoyment. I don't even have a goal around a guitar playing. I could have. That'd be perfectly legitimate. But for me, it's just something that I use as a diversion, something that's fulfilling to me, but it's not something that I'm trying to work toward. It's pure enjoyment. Does that help?
That helps tremendously. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Great.
I think that's good to recognize that everything you do doesn't even have to have a goal associated with it. Like you're playing the guitar, you know, some things are just for fun and you set goals to the things that matter. And then some things just kind of let them go.
Yep, absolutely. And focus is so important, Joy. I remember this old Chinese proverb that says, man who chases two rabbits catches neither.
Mm-hmm.
And the principle there is that, you know, that focus is a really powerful ally to accomplishing important things. And you can end up chasing too many things. So more focus is better. The fewer goals that you can have, honestly, the better. And that's why I say 7 to 10 at the outside. And some people would recommend fewer than that, but for sure that at the outside.
Lots of talk on Twitter about how God fits in with your goals. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think I even wrote a post about this at one point called Don't Leave God Out of Your Planning. And obviously everybody listening to this call is not going to relate to this. So if this is not you and it's not important to you, just, you know, indulge us for a minute because it is important to me. You know, ultimately for me, I want to run everything through the filter of would this be pleasing to God? You know, that's just for me. You know, there's something transcendent that I'm after. And it's the will of God. I'm trying to please Him in what I do. So I'm not just coming up with these things for a sense of self-gratification or indulgence. So things that get onto my goal list for 2014 are things that I'm actively praying about. In fact, I'm typically praying about them for months before they end up on my goal list. But then for sure, those goals end up being something that I pray about. Because for me, a goal to be meaningful has to be something that's bigger than what I could do on my own strength. You know, I'm looking for something that's a God-sized goal, something that requires God's assistance to pull it off. Again, that's just me. I'm not trying to impose my values on somebody else, but since the question was asked, that's a really important component for me. And obviously, I want to make sure that the goal is in alignment with God's purpose for my life. I'm trying to be a steward over my life.
Right.
And I don't want to just do something just for the sake of doing it. I want it to fit into a bigger scheme of what my calling is.
Well, and that's where so much of how gratifying it is when you achieve that goal is to know that it's bigger than just you.
Yes, indeed.
Very important. Oh my goodness, we could talk all night. So our next caller, your number ends in...
Hi, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. It was actually a little bit ago when people were saying, you know, how do you go about taking the next step? And Michael, you answered the question, I think, in that when I have had a goal that I maybe did not complete the first time successfully, I found that having somebody that gave me comfortable accountability helped me go through it. Go through it with somebody else. Finding someone who is either at the same place or a few steps ahead of me.
Yes. I think that's important too. Goal setting is not something that has to be a solo activity. You know, it's something that really I think is best done with other people. People that, as Joy was talking about earlier, that you can celebrate with, that can provide the resources that you need to succeed. And even if you're a solopreneur, even if you're, a mom at home with kids, you know, there are other people that you can pull into your circle and say, let's do this together and make it a group activity. I think that's so important.
Thanks, Mary. I'm going to do one more here too. This is from a caller whose number ends in...
Hi, can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
Great. Thanks very much for taking my call. I'm Sandra in San Francisco.
Hey, Sandra.
And I'm curious about how you discern challenges that come from your feelings and instinct between wanting to do something and then the thoughts and the practical business applications, perhaps maybe coming at a cost or something else you need to do, or mostly about business considerations.
Could you give me a concrete example? I'm not sure I'm tracking and I want to make sure I answer your question.
All right, sure. Thanks very much. So I'm in the process of looking to launch more of an online coaching presence. I have a full-time office and I recently was invited to join a colleague in her office 2 days a week. I'm sort of discerning whether I'm going to leave my office, which I have full experience of, or to go into her office at 2 days a week versus bringing someone in to sublet my office.
And so your question is, how do you discern what's the right answer to that?
How do you discern something that's really complicated that seems like there's no right answer, knowing that there are different aspects to each facet?
Well, first of all, you just said something that's really important there, and that is there is no right answer in that particular situation because it all depends, and this goes back to goal setting. What's your ultimate goal? If you're trying to build, for example, a solo practice or you're trying to establish a personal brand, you know, maybe it's better to stay separate. If you're trying to have some kind of transformative impact that would be better with more than one person, then maybe that's the right answer. But I think this does come back to goal setting and to just kind of objectify a little bit and say, well, let me just ask myself the question, where do I want this to go? Where does this lead in 12 months or in 3 years? And is it any closer to what I feel like ultimately I want to achieve? And if it is, then that's a necessary or could be an important tactic to get there. And I think sometimes we get sidetracked on these kinds of decisions because we think that they're final. You know, it's like, oh my gosh, you know, if I make that decision, then I can't back up and do something differently. But there are a few decisions that we make in life, honestly, that are so consequential that we can't recover if we've made the wrong decision. I can't tell you how many wrong decisions I've made, blind alleys I've gone down, but I've always learned something. And even those decisions that I make that turn out to have not been, you know, from some perspective, the right decision, they were still helpful or useful to me. And so I would just not put so much pressure on you. Just, you know, do the next most important right thing, make the best decision you can, but know that, you know, there really is a net under you. You can go back, you can redo it, you can go in another direction. And regardless of what happens, you're going to learn from it.
I appreciate that. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Michael, what do you struggle with? What are one of the two things that you struggle with each day in regards to making progress towards your goals?
Well, man, I tell you, I struggle with being distracted because I'm interested in so many different things. And, you know, Joy, you've worked with me long enough to know that, you know, I have, you know, ideas every day. And you've said to me before, you know, that's great, but let's put it on the back burner. We're not going to act on it now because I can derail the team because I love starting stuff. I even enjoy finishing stuff. It's just that middle part that's hard and it's easy to get distracted. And, you know, it's easy to jump from doing the hard work that the next action will require. And it'll, for me at least, to jump to something, to starting something new. But finishing is the key thing that I am really trying to focus on. It's been my, like my key word for the last couple of years, just finish it, you know, get the ball into the end zone. And it's a struggle for me. You know, it takes all my creative effort, the people around me focusing me on that, and just trying to stay focused on finishing.
The last 10 yards is the hardest for me usually.
So true.
One more thing here. I know we're running out of time, but how do you deal with fear? The fear of, you know, what if I don't reach my goal? What if I promise too much? What if I can't live up to my staff's expectations? That question came from Liz Fox, and she said, you know, how do you deal with that fear? That's an issue for so many people.
Yeah, it is. And I think it's a very, very common thing. And I think that part of what gives fear its power is that we often think that we're the only ones struggling with it. But I can tell you from having spoken to leaders and CEOs and people that are in prominent positions of leadership, that even the people that are that seem to be on the surface the most confident, that seem to have their act the most together, are the same people that in the middle of the night are feeling overwhelmed, they're feeling uncertain, they're feeling fearful. So that's just normal. So to me, it's just an emotion. You know, it's one of those things that I take note of, but I'm not going to let it stop me. Because, and this isn't original with me, but it's been very helpful to me. Courage is not the absence of fear. It's the willingness to move forward in spite of the fear. So I feel all that same fear. I mean, when we launched the program today, when I launched my book back when, any new initiative, you know, I'm feeling that sense of fear like this might not work. But that's also a cue to me that I'm doing exactly what I should be doing. Because if you don't have that little fear, then you're not out of your comfort zone. And if you're not out of your comfort zone, you're probably not doing anything significant. So let your fear guide you to the right destination.
This is so inspiring. I love hearing you talk about this topic. I mean, I know you, but I think people that don't know you personally can tell you're very passionate about it. And I think everyone listening to this call can hear themselves in one of the questions. I know I did in several. So well,
thank you.
The whole conversation just makes me excited to start my goal setting process for next year. And also really aware that maybe how I did it last year won't really cut it in the future, that I can improve that. So I am convinced after an hour that I want next year to be different than 2013 and just be more intentional and more skillful about how I set goals. And I think lots of people listening probably could relate to that tonight. So Michael, tell me, how do you say that we can make this next year, 2014, our best year ever?
Well, and this, you know, just a warning to everybody on the call, this, I am going to talk about the product because I really, really believe in it. I've created a lot of products in my life. I've been a part of a lot of programs. I've been a part of launching a lot of services. I have never been more passionate than 5 days to your best year ever. This is a course that I really believe if you do what I suggest in the course, it will change your life. This will be 2014, your best year ever. You know, here's the deal. Traditional goal setting doesn't work. You need to do something different. And what I share in the course is a proven process. So whether it's health and fitness or your career or the key relationships in your life or even your spiritual life, more margin, this is a super concentrated 5-day course for high achievers. I've been through a lot of courses too that take forever to get through and wear you out, and I don't finish them, you don't finish them. This is very concentrated. Basically, the idea is that you take 5 days, give me about 30 to 45 minutes a day, and at the end of that, you will have a plan for next year that will give you the kind of clarity, focus, a sense of control, the peace of mind that comes from having a plan and knowing that you're entering into something really, really significant. Now, here's the deal about the course. You can find out all you need to know at bestyearever.me/register. But in addition to the main course, I'm also throwing in some free bonuses. One of them is a template for a productive day, which talks about my morning routine and how to craft your morning routine so that you can jumpstart your day and get it off to the best day possible. A beginner's guide to task management, some of the proven techniques. I've tried, I think, every software out there and every technique out there to really make my day more productive. And I share all that in this screencast. But again, you can find out all the information, Joy, at bestyearever.me/register. There's a lot of copy there. There's some videos and it'll give you some information that you need if you're interested in pursuing it.
When it comes to being productive and focusing on task management, there is no one I think I've ever known that knows more about the subject than you. And for sure, you have tried every app ever created.
Thank you. I think.
So bestyearever.me/register. Good deal. Very exciting. Well, that's about all the time we have left for this live Q&A. Michael, can you give us just your final thoughts to wrap up?
Man, I would say, Joy, you're going to live through next year more than likely. So why not make it extraordinary year? You know, why just have it a repeat of 2013 or a repeat of 2012? How about make it an extraordinary year? You start stacking some years up like that, you can have an extraordinary life. And I think that's a thing at the end of the day that we all want. We want a life that we get to the end of our days and we look back on and we say, you know what? We left nothing on the field. We gave it all. We really achieved what mattered most to us. And that to me is the possibility of a best year ever and the thing that's exciting.
I love that. Perfect. Well, thank you everyone for joining us. This can be your year, but you have to take the first step. I hope you feel just as inspired and excited as I do about the coming year and that you're ready to get clear, get motivated, and get started on accomplishing what matters most to you. As Michael said, head on over to the registration page at bestyearever.me/register and join us for the course. I'll be there, Michael will be there, and our whole team. So now go and make it your best year ever.
Well, that's about it for this episode of This Is Your Life. I hope you enjoyed the replay of this live Q&A call and it helps you get 2014 off to a great start. If you've enjoyed this episode, please show the love by going to michaelhyatt.com/love and tweeting a link to the show. I'd be so grateful if you do that. It helps me keep the visibility of the show up and helps people to discover it on iTunes. But until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Now go make it count. This is your